Welcome to the Stanza 2010 Opening Night Podcast. On today's podcast, we have a distinctive Irish theme to reflect the fact that tonight is St. Patrick's Day. We include poetry from Irish poets Anne-Marie Fife and Moya Cannon, as well as contributions from Jamaican Kai Miller and music from poet Cathal Dalet and Irish traditional baroque trio Dordan. But we'll start things off with our outgoing festival director, Brian Johnson.
Can I welcome you all to Stanza 2010? Running throughout Stanza this year is a very strong Irish theme. Anyone who has glanced at the posters, the programmes, the website will be able to find out why. Two words, Seamus Heaney. A wonderful, wonderful poet, someone we haven't had at Stanza since 1999, so it's a fantastically welcome return. But we have, on the back of Seamus's appearance, which we've known about for a year or two now, built a strong Irish strand running right through the programme. We are a very international festival, and we have poets coming from all over the world, 91 people all together coming to Stanza to participate. Poets, artists, musicians, writers, people working in many different media.
About 10 countries are represented on the programme this year. We have at this launch just a small taster of what's in store for you during the festival over the next 4 days. Kai Miller is a Jamaican poet and novelist. His third collection of poetry is due out later this year, together with his second novel. Kai sees himself very much as coming from the diversity which is contemporary Caribbean poetry. I was entranced by his poetry from the very first time I heard him read, and I'm delighted that he is this year's poet in residence.
I'll just read one poem for you. Poets are often accused of writing poems about poems, and even when we think that here's a poem that's not about a poem, by the end we realize it's a poem yet again about a poem. This is called Some Definitions for Light, or Some Definitions for Light Etymology. Photo, root word for light, hence photology, the study of light. Photometer, the measurement of light. Photophilia, the love of light. The photophilic are drawn helpless, like sunflowers whose round faces travel across the day, like the hand of a clock. Like Agatha, who insisted on dying even though she was well. Photomania, an obsession with light. In 1974, a man was found sweating in his small room, surrounded by a congregation of lamps, 137 bulbs burning, even during the day he was trying to create. Photophobia, the fear of light. Photophobics hide in shadows. The photophobic cannot read this. Their eyes hurt. They are at risk of going blind. Blindness could be called photomaximus or photominimus. It is at once the absence and the great excess of light, the belly of a cave and its opening. Photogenic, concerning the basic helix strands of light, and also the ability to birth light. Photographer is one who writes about it. A photograph is writing composed of it, of brilliant, brilliant light. Look, look closely. This is a photograph.
Anne-Marie Fife was born in Ireland and now lives in London. She is active in poetry in many ways. She is herself a prize-winning poet, and her new and selected is due to be published by Serin later this year. She'll be reading tomorrow at 5 o'clock at Parliament Hall and taking part in one of our poetry breakfasts.
It's wonderful to be back here in the Kingdom of Fife. I haven't been in St Andrews for a few years now. My branch of the Fife family moved a couple of hundred years ago. And being back here today, I realise why the North Antrim coast and the glens of Antrim was familiar for my forefathers and foremothers. The windswept links and the rocky headlands and the brisk North Sea. So now that I'm back on the east coast of Scotland and have come from the east edge of Ireland, I was reminded of a residency I did a few years ago on the east coast of England in Aldeburgh. And at the end of that residency, I had a week just to write. And I put away clocks and watches, and I decided to live by the season and by the light. When you grow up with this light, you know what time it is any time of day. Before clock time, I freeze all timepieces on a Monday, track days by Oscuro and an eastward Chiaro, as women generations back on family land would have done in October, gathering for the dark. I close curtains early that first afternoon, read after a 40-year gap, Seal Mourning by Rowena Farr, inscribed Annie Thorpness, 57. Isolation deepens. I feel already the thirst, my father's legacy, for news on the hour. I ponder on Lightkeeper's wife, on death row men, on the blind who keep watch in unlighted rooms. And in another country, security alarms, fire sirens sound, vanilla sponges rise and rise, babies arrive too soon. Aging lovers utter last words. Vancouver's buses run no earlier or later than published. In Oxford Street, Spanish teenagers queue for roasted chestnuts, and the leaves beyond my window descend at fluttering, diastolic intervals, more hushed in light's absence after capitulation and sleep in timeless night in a week without time.
Cathal Dallet is a poet and musician, also Irish and now based in London. He's a poet and critic, as well as a musician, with his very highly acclaimed second collection, The Year of Not Dancing, published by Blackstaff last year. He's here this evening to provide us with music. Indeed, he has already been doing so.
Right, you've all heard me playing a fair number of jigs, polkas, waltzes, hornpipes, and so on. And despite what Eleanor said about the range of things I do, I've played only Irish tunes up to now, particularly Irish tunes associated with poets. I don't know if any of you know those song airs that I played, but I played The Sally Gardens, which is a Yeats poem, Kavanagh's Raglan Road, Tom Moore's The Last Rose of Summer, The Foggy Dew, which was written by my uncle Charlie O'Neill, the poet. And they're virtually all the song airs we know are songs that have been made famous by poets. Sorry, Padraig Colum, She Moves Through the Fair. So the legacy of poets and tunes is very much the same as it is here in Scotland, with all the great songs that come down to us from Robbie Burns. But I'm going to do something slightly cross-cultural now, and that is that I mentioned waltzes and polkas being part of Irish traditional music from 18th and 19th century. But of course, the Irish jig and the shottish were part of European, what they call serious music. I have a little bit of an argument about that, because if you ever see a bunch of Irish guys in a pub in a session, they're pretty serious. The idea that European music is somehow serious, and when Mozart puts a jig into his opera, that's composed music, whereas when we play a jig, it's somehow different. So I'm imagining a ball in a great Irish house somewhere in the 19th century. Doesn't matter whether it's an Anglo-Irish house or one of the great Gaelic houses. And they would play a mix that was Irish music and European continental serious music. No one was more serious than the other. But this is the Rambling Pitchfork, which always reminds me of the rambling broom in Disney's version of Dukak's Sorcerer's Apprentice, where the brush takes the pails of water up and down the stairs. I always see the rambling pitchfork sort of dancing about a farm like that. then a little jig by Mozart, a jig by Verdi, and end up with Lanigan's Ball. So here we go.
An honor chúne bhain seo anocht ar Láil Páraic in seo an Albain agus go háirid a casa ag féilechoch clúteach le stanza. It's a great honor for us to be here in Scotland on St. Patrick's Day and playing at such a very special festival as stanza. And thank you all for having us.
It's a great, great pleasure to be back in St. Andrews. The last time I was here, I think stanza was only a glint in someone's eye or someone's heart. And a particular pleasure to be here this evening to read with Matthew and with Berthon. I think it was Pasternak who said that every poet is a failed musician. This may not be completely true. It's true in my case, so I compensate by reading with musicians and writing as much as I can about music. A number of years ago, many of you here would be familiar, I'm sure, with the work of the wonderful short story writer Alistair MacLeod from Nova Scotia. And a number of years ago, I spent some time in Canada. And I was very moved to read his work and to come across songs, references to songs, which had travelled to Nova Scotia from Scotland and which I had learned as a child in Donegal, in the northwest of Ireland. So this song relates to the people who carry the songs, and it occurred to me that very often it is not the most privileged to carry the songs. The people who carry the songs frequently are those who need them most, because they need to create the emotional weather of their home in their new host country. There's a wonderful line by an Irish singer called Frank Hart. He said, "Those in power write the history, so those who suffer write the songs." They're a kind of an emotional history, I think. "It was always those with little else to carry who carried the songs, to Babylon, to the Mississippi. Some of these last possessed less than nothing, did not own their own bodies. Yet, 3 centuries later, deep rhythms from Africa, stowed in their hearts, their bones, carry the world songs. For those who left my county, girls from Downings and the Rosses, who followed herring boats north to Shetland, gutting the sea silver as they went, or boys from Ranafast who took the derry boat, who slept over a rope in a bathe. Songs were their soul's currency, the pure metal of their hearts, to be exchanged for other gold, other songs, which rang out true and bright when flung down upon the deal boards of their days. No poems about St. Patrick. Perhaps I should have tossed one off for the occasion. But I thought I might read one about the man whom we call Columbkill, whom you call Columba. A number of years ago, I spent some time in Derry, and I was I wanted to write something which could, which would speak to both communities in the north. I was looking for some image, or some personage, or some event. And in fact, I found that right across the two traditions, there was great affection for a very, very contrary 6th century Donegal man who was famous for causing trouble at home. He saw lots of places cursed by him. He took our first copyright case and came off to Scotland and said he was never going to come back again. But he did. The poets of Ireland then, as now, were a troublesome lot, and they asked him to come back. So he had to come back blindfolded because he'd sworn that he would never, ever look on the land of Ireland again as his penance. So he came back blindfolded. This was written at the time of the first ceasefire, in the first IRA ceasefire, and he became a peacemaker in Scotland, and it was a prayer, really, or trying to invoke that sense of profound change that somebody who was troublesome and contrary would, if he could become a peacemaker, trying to invoke that sense, really. To Columbkill returning, Portacurry, as many of you know, is a little bay in the south of Iona, and it's where he buried his boat because he wasn't going home. To Columbkill returning, it is time now to dig down through the shingle of Portachardy, to bring up the skeleton of ash and oak, to stretch new skins over the ribs, and to turn the beak of your boat to the southwest. For this time, your journey must be not across the spine of Britain, but across the scarred back of Ulster, across the Sperrins and into the glens, down through the Mourns and Slievegullion, and into the small, rainy towns with their supermarkets, their video stores and graveyards, into all the farms with their sprayed barns and land rovers, their certainties and their hurt. You'll make your landfall at Derry, the maiden city of the planter, Oak Grove of Kinyolconnell, in the territory of Kinyolone. Citadel or sanctuary. It was always, at least half beleaguered, the foil water north, east and south of it, and to the west, a bog most uncommonly wet. And this time you must take off the blindfold, for your vision is needed, and we'll need every ounce of your diplomacy. You who, in the middle of the path, turned your back on much of what was native and started out again, away from the carnage under Ben Bulben and all your self-righteousness over the book. You who turned contrariness to grace and scooped honey from the lion's skull. Another preoccupation, almost as strong as that with music, is with archaeology. I often think we don't choose our themes, you know, they choose us. This is dedicated to John Berger, the art critic. I came across a wonderful article a number of years ago which he'd written about the Chauvet Caves in the south of France and about the artwork done there 32,000 years ago. I mean, much, much older than Lascaux. And my imagination can sort of, I can imagine back 2,000, perhaps 4,000 years. But 30,000 years, or 32,000 years. And the point he made was that we don't draw, the drawings were as beautiful or as fine as anything we can do now. And it reminded me of something which Iris Murdoch had said, that the arts do not progress in the same way as the sciences, that nobody's better than Homer. And so this is, I suppose, to the artist in all of us. I mean, just the desire to bring something beautiful out of matter is so central to our humanity. Chauvet. One red line defining his rump draws the small mammoth out of the cave wall, renders him more than a stalagmite. In another chamber, a bear's paw protrudes, outlined in charcoal. The animals had been in the wall all along, awaiting recognition, release. The Stone Age artists knew it, just as the Italian master would know it, as his chisel unlocked perfect forms from Carrara's marble, as we know it. When some informed, deft gesture, a tilt in a melody, a lit line in a poem or a song, draws us out into our humanity, warm-blooded, bewildered. Some slightly newer poems. This is called Flowers at Loch Crewe. Loch Crewe is, again, an early archaeological site. Rather like your Mai's Howe, where the sun shines in, I think, at sunset on the at winter solstice, if I'm not mistaken. These sort of burial places, chambers of the dead, which are also celebrations of light. We had there are poets at the opening spoke wonderfully of light. And these much, much later people than those who did the Chauvet paintings, perhaps only 5,000 years ago, when they were burying and honouring their dead, they were also honouring the return of light. I visited Loch Crewe in County Meath, and there they have this wonderful, these wonderful burial places, and the openings are oriented towards the rising sun at the equinox. And the sun shines in through this chamber, through a little passageway, illuminates a backstone, and on it there are little flowers and suns. It's a time, it's a calendar as well. It showed those people when that this was the proper time to set seeds. And since actually St. Patrick's Day is actually an equinox festival, obviously, I thought it would be appropriate to do it. It's just, a Christian festival imposed on a pre-Christian one. What was the line? It was a line, a pagan line in a Christian bottle. So perhaps this should be dedicated actually to the sponsors of the festival, a pagan oil brand. Flowers at Loch Crew. Shakespeare's wonderful line is an epigraph. He speaks of death. How with this rage shall beauty hold a plea whose action is no stronger than a flower? We have no key with which to enter this chamber of the dead, so must peer through an iron gate along the stone passage, to where a rising sun at equinox will flash its torch on flowers and suns, a seeding and reaping calendar, like suns and flowers in a child's copybook. A friend tells me that fossil pollen is found in the earliest burials. He says this is what makes us human as much as stone tools, our ceremony of grief, attended by what is most beautiful, most fragrant on this earth. Today is the last day of our winter. Ice lingers under the stone lintel, but a brilliant sun reaches far into the passage, lights a corner of the back stone faintly, gives us one carved flower picked out in white. A family plays among the ruined cairns. The father photographs them, then gathers them to go, calling on the youngest to come along. Bridge, Bridge. Tomorrow is St. Bridget's Day. We drive home through soft pastureland. In a low corner of a field grow patches of greening rushes, and near an old two-story house on a slope, strong clumps of snowdrops.
That was Moya Cannon, and the music was Dorden. Thanks very much for listening to the opening night podcast from Stanza 2010. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow night, full of some of the highlights of Thursday's festival. We'll see you then.
Ná éile podraic sin a íomh.